You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
G-Shawn, J. Will, and Max. The podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Warriors win 109-100, game three. Got the chain out. Jay's got the chain out.
All right, Stephen A.
They're now up 3-0 on the Mavs.
I saw him the other day when he did. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, Stephen A, we got the chain out today. We showing them, okay.
I had to be told that when I first got on TV. You got to tuck it. Yeah, I had to. I had the tiger's eye iced out on both sides.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay. But you didn't
wear it outside the
clothes.
You cannot wear your chain outside your clothes when you have a suit on.
You see, Keto, they don't tell him to tuck his chain in. You know us.
Oh, they did.
You got to tuck it in. Hey,
no,
man,
they did. I had to be told you have to tuck that in. You can't wear that out.
Where, on air?
Yes.
Yeah, but why would you ever want to wear it out?
Because when I first got on the air, I wasn't wearing a suit and tie. Matter of fact, when I first got on the air on Friday Night Fights, they were like,
you mean when you first got on the air in your career?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm sure you knew then and didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't even think I knew. I got the chain. You wear it out.
I mean, if I'm not going to wear it. If you had on a no-collar shirt and it was a round neck or something, that's different. But when you got on a collared shirt and you pulling your chain out, like, that's doing a lot.
It's doing a lot. Yeah. Like,
you flexing your muscles.
Like back in the day when you had a beeper and you had to wear it outside on the belt. Show everyone. Look,
that
you got
two-way
a beeper.
Pager, man. Hold on, let me.
Used to check the beeper, no batteries in it, nothing.
I
got to
figure out.
You got those herringbone chains, Key. Remember those herringbone chains, the gold
ones? Oh, yeah. Yeah,
real thick ones, yeah.
I got to figure out this Golden State. I'm assuming Miami championship.
Oh, you calling that?
I'm assuming.
You calling that? Okay.
I'm assuming.
Long way to go.
Golden State for sure. I don't know about Miami.
Golden State for sure. They're going to be rested.
Well, I mean, and one of the things, Jay, you were really hoping for, and I was with you when you brought it up, was Golden State and Phoenix. Because a lot of legacy stuff for Chris Paul and Steph and da-da-da. It doesn't look to me like Phoenix was going to have much for Golden State if they couldn't get by Dallas, the way Golden State's handling Dallas. Let's focus on the Mavs for a second.
See, I think the matchup would have been different real quick, but go ahead.
Of course. Yeah. But who do you like in the end?
Oh, I still like Golden State.
Right. So, but Luka and the Mavs, right, given what they have on the team, can this team eventually, it ain't going to be this year, but eventually win a title as currently constructed? Of course, you got to tweak things here and there, but is it possible to win with the current construction of this roster?
No. No, win an NBA championship? No. I think this team needs to make some moves. I think they were too guard-oriented at times. Like, I would like for them to have a big that they could take advantage of. Like, I'll throw it out there. Like, I don't know what's happening to his situation with him, but like a DeAndre Ayton potentially or Zach LaVine, another guard that could be dynamic. Like, I struggled last night watching Spencer Dinwiddie not create more plays for himself and being aggressive. So I think Luka is a generational talent. I think that Jason Kidd is the one head coach that can get him to buy into a different style of play by giving the ball up early. If there were players personnel-wise that can create shots for themselves and play faster, I think Luka's conditioning is something that has to change. I think he has to play faster. But as they're currently constructed right now, I do not think they have enough in the tank with the way the Western Conference is going to be there when it's all said and done. I think they need to add different pieces and another superstar to their table.
They certainly got to get a superstar. Luka's not enough to carry them. I understand he's a scorer and all those sort of things. But if I'm giving him 30 a game, but I'm getting 26, I'm going to take that all day long. I'm going to trade that every single day of the week. They've got to find another star. Everybody has two. Everybody has two. You're not going to win a championship with just one. I know Kawhi did it a couple years ago, but Kyle Lowry and what's the guy, Jay? I said Kawhi.
Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry,
but then also they had the third guy, the center.
Pascal Siakam?
Yeah, Siakam was there with them. And you can't win championships all by yourself. The Lakers had to go out and acquire AD. Okay, you look at what the Milwaukee Bucks did a year ago. They had Middleton as part of the Giannis deal. So I think they certainly got to go get somebody for sure.
Let's go back to Luka for a second. Because I hear you, of course. No one does it by themselves, right? Unless it's a freaky thing where a year everyone gets hurt and someone squeezes in. But I hear what you're saying, Key. But I'm looking at Luka and thinking about the two guys that he's frequently compared to. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, right? Because they're oversized, ball handling. I mean, Bird could handle, but that's not – he was like a power forward, small forward, power forward. But had the ball a lot, distributed a lot, could set up your offense, that kind of stuff. And Magic, obviously, the point guard. Magic and Bird made the people around them better all the time. I can't think of a single team where it's like Magic and Bird didn't elevate the surrounding pieces, right? And Luka has some of the same skill set, but is frequently it gives me the feeling, and I know last night they were just cold from outside, Jay, but a lot of times you look at the end of the game, 3 assists, 2 assists, when he should have double digits, right? Mm-hmm. Like he should be the kind of player that elevates everyone, not just that drops 40.
1,000%. But see, where my brain goes to is, does Luka have flaws? Yeah, he does have flaws. Is he a superstar generational talent? Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to figure out the flaws with the personnel I surround him with. And I'm looking at Golden State as saying, Key, there's so much firepower on Golden State that we're going to talk about what Luka needs to do to single-handedly keep his team in the game. Like people today are going to debase Luka and be like, oh, let me tell you, Luka is not going to be the guy, or he has all the stuff he needs to work on. And I'm saying, yeah, Luka does have a lot of stuff he needs to work on, but Luka also needs help in order to get his team to the point that has the same kind of offensive explosion like Golden State does. Because Golden State is just different. Golden State is going to make a lot of teams look like they have flaws.
Yeah, they're close, but I heard Max say something. Oh, yeah, you know, they missed the shots. Well, that's the same thing we said in game two. All right, well, you know, they didn't shoot it well. Well, okay, so there's a recurring theme there. Mm-hmm. They're not shooting the ball well. They're not knocking down the shots. What do we said it in? We said it in game two. We said it in game three. Oh, well, I can't do Wiggins. I don't know if he can do it. Well, the same thing is happening. So clearly they need to go out there and find out how to get some help, speed up the game for Luka. And you say, well, he's a generational talent. Yeah, on the offensive side of the ball he is. Yeah, for sure. But defensively, come on out here, Jay. Mm-hmm. Come out here and get some of this.
What's the difference between him and James Harden from a couple of years ago? Luka and James Harden from a couple of years ago. What's the difference?
Luka's size?
Yeah, but in terms of effectiveness.
Well, James Harden has the ball and dances more in the perimeter. Mm-hmm. Like he's more iso ball. Luka does more out of pick and roll.
Okay.
A lot more out of pick and roll.
But the result seems to me more or less the same in terms of the numbers, in terms of the wins, in terms of how far the team will go. I mean, James Harden, when he had Chris Paul and he had shooters, mm-hmm. and in his greatest season, probably should have beaten the Warriors, but they choked in Game 7 at home.
What year is this for Luka?
Very early on, no question. Okay. So the big difference you're saying is that Luka is where James Harden was, give or take, in his prime, but in his, like, third season.
Fourth season. What I'm saying is Luka still has a lot of growth. I'm not sitting here on national TV trying to defend that Luka is, like, the perfect player at all, because he's not. There are aspects sometimes where he holds on to the ball too long. There are aspects about his conditioning that needs to be better. But I'm saying he's at that critical point, Key, whereas if Dallas and Mark Cuban don't surround him with the right pieces to elevate him, some people will start talking about him as like a James Harden type player, and that's not who he is.
There's nothing wrong with James Harden.
James Harden is special too, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
Jay, what game is this? What game would this be in the NBA season? What are we at, like? 100? What
95, like, yeah, hundreds.
So he still needs to get in shape at 100?
Yes.
That don't even, I can't even comprehend that. I've been playing all season long, and you're telling me he still needs to get in shape?
Yeah, but Key, there's something. He has been so uniquely gifted that at his size and his frame, you look at his body, there's still a lot of baby fat on his body. And but, like, and people have talked around. I talked to Mark Cuban on my podcast. It's maybe 4 months ago.
I don't understand that, though.
On the limits, right? And he was like, yeah, we talked to Luka a lot about conditioning and getting into championship.
But you're playing basketball literally every night.
There's a difference, though, Key. There's a difference in what you do in the offseason that gets you ready to be another level type elite when you're at this juncture of the season.
This has always been the curse of the gifted, right?
It's so weird.
Since you're
me.
15 years old, you're the baddest dude on every court you step on. You get to the highest league in the world, and you're busting everybody from the time you're a rookie. You know, at a certain point, until you hit that wall where it's like, oh, damn, I got to get better. What's the incentive to get in shape? I think he probably has it now,
it's hard for me to digest what y'all saying about getting in shape when I'm playing throughout the course of the damn season.
You're
I'm in
basketball.
Shape.
You should be in. I mean, it's hard.
You should
to
be
in shape.
In
right?
shape.
That's wrong, though. I can play basketball all day long and not be in great shape.
Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. So, coming up, guys, is the Lakers' job really a bad one? That people are trying to paint it as a bad one. We're going to talk about that next. Keyshawn,
yeah,
Jay, Will, and Max, ESPN Radio and ESPN 2. We have some breaking news. Or as I like to say, this just in to Twitter, I'm back. This was tweeted by Jay Will. You just tweeted, I'm back, Jay.
Well, I made a decision over the weekend that I'm going to try to make a comeback attempt.
Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Max, the podcast.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, we're brought to you by Progressive. Well, we're presented by Progressive Insurance.
You know I not changed.
Let's get it straight. We're brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Get the $45 Silver Unlimited plan from Straight Talk Wireless. So, guys, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, the Lakers head coaching finalists include Bucks assistant Darvin Ham, ex-Trailblazers coach Terry Stotts, Warriors assistant Kenny Atkinson. Lakers tried to interview Juwan Howard. He declined. He's coaching his two sons, Jason Jett, in Ann Arbor. Juwan Howard played at Michigan with Lakers GM Rob Pelinka and with LeBron James on the Miami Heat. The Celtics had interest in Juwan Howard a year ago before eventually hiring Ime Udoka, and that's worked out so far very well for the Celtics. So I asked a question earlier in the show, guys.
Yes, Max.
At the end of Kobe Bryant's career, and I don't mean the last season, the last several seasons, it was hard for the Lakers to attract free agents. Even when they had a lot of cap space, they couldn't give the money away. And partly that's because I think, hearing at the time, young stars were hesitant to go to Kobe's team, especially at that point in his career, because he was still good enough to be dangerous, but not good enough to win a championship anymore, or so the feeling was. And so it was a whole lot to deal with to kind of not be able to get over the top. I'm wondering how much, when you say, Jay, I'm telling you, the Lakers' job is not as attractive as people might think, and da-da-da, How much of that is the front office turmoil that you point out? How much of it is an evaluation of LeBron James, who might still be the best player in the game, I don't know, but hasn't played very much in the last several seasons and isn't what he once was? Is it any of it commentary on LeBron, Le GM, as Kyrie called him?
Different things that you're unpacking there. You ask me the basketball aspect of LeBron, or you ask me the Le GM aspect of LeBron?
I'm saying people will put up with a lot when playing with you means a title because you're by far the best player in the game. But it comes to a certain point where a guy diminishes enough where it's like, I don't know if I want to put up with all that.
No, I think that is inaccurate. LeBron James was in the MVP conversation this year. Even at the stage of his career, his passing ability, his playmaking ability are off the charts.
I'm asking. I'm not saying.
No. I hear you. Yeah, I just that's not the way I look at it at all. When I hear LeBron James' name, I still would like to go coach a guy like LeBron James because that is a special one-of-a-one type of talent.
Pat Beverly said he wanted to go play with LeBron when he was in studio last week.
It's for me, when I hear about there being hesitancy in the marketplace about coaching there, it's because of who's really running the show. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and I think that needs to be handled, and there needs to be, hey, here's protocol. If you're talking about here's the pecking order of who's in control key, who's making the decisions on personnel, how are we coming to conclusions? Yes, we want LeBron James to have a lot of say. It can't be final say. Jeannie Buss, Rob Pelinka, are you making decisions? Is that it? Is that what we have? If that's the case, then as a head coach, I need to have say in the personnel that I would like to coach as well. And it needs to be a collaboration. And I don't think it was felt that way with Frank Vogel. That's why I think there was a little bit of reluctance from people around the league when they considered the Lakers' job.
Well, what I would say is the Lakers' job is still a hell of a job. Has it been dysfunctional at times? Yeah, all organizations are dysfunctional at times until they get it back right. And this is why Jeannie is taking back control, so to speak, of the organization. She kind of gave a little bit of leeway to LeBron and company to put the roster together to some degree with final sign-off. But as she said before, she's in the one in control. And you clearly can see that by the coaching candidates that is on that list and who they're targeting. And then people would think that there's a lot of coaching candidates that's out there that turn down a Lakers job. It's not true. It's factually not true. When you look at Juwan Howard, I mean, Juwan Howard's going to stay with his kids. Why would he recruit them to Michigan and then bolt on them several months later? No one does that. And then you talk about some of the other coaches that's out there, Jay. What veteran coaches would the Lakers get? Doc Rivers is still stuck in Philadelphia. They didn't fire him. Then you say, well, they can go get Greg Popovich or something. Well, Greg Popovich is a million years old. Who are you going to go get? Well, you know, they can Sam Cassell. Well, what's the difference between Darwin Ham and Sam Cassell?
Yeah.
First-time head coaches. So I don't mind where they're at. I think what they've got to do is they got to make a decision on the roster.
I hear
what is the roster makeup going to be, not the coaching.
I hear what you guys are saying. Let me just point out. In Miami, Pat Riley was in charge. Everyone knew it, right? In Cleveland, LeBron James was calling the shots, and it didn't seem to be a problem. I just noticed that when you say who's in charge and da-da-da-da-da, now it's an issue. It wasn't even an issue a couple years ago, and LeBron didn't get everything he wanted, right? Because, you know, Ty Lue didn't become the coach. Jeannie was not going to get – this wasn't Cleveland, but it also wasn't Miami. It was somewhere in between. But why is it an issue now, but it wasn't an issue a couple of years ago?
I don't see LeBron and the way they operate being an issue. That's led to multiple championships. I see a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and there's a lot of between Kurt Rambis, Limber Randis, Phil Jackson coming back into the play. There's a lot going on. There's a jockeying for power. But I don't see LeBron. Like, look, Kyrie talked about it this weekend in the podcast, I Am an Athlete. And he was like, yeah, you know, when we won a championship, LeBron orchestrated what that roster was. Like, so for me, one out of every 3 years, if that leads you to a world championship, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll take that. That's worth it. Is it going to come with drama? Yes, because you're in L.A.
You brought it up.
You're in L.A.
You brought- LA reports on Twitter or on social media or on things that happen with celebrities like it's a bomb. You know what I mean? Like, it's a massive thing. Everything's going to be blown out of proportion.
You brought it up about the I Am Athlete podcast where Brandon Marshall's podcast, which is excellent. He was on the show last week also, but where he says LeBron, where Kyrie said LeBron plays GM. He put the squad together was a quote. I wasn't mad at him. I was like, all right, bet. This is how it goes, especially as you said, when you're in the finals every year. But it got us to thinking. Let me ask the question, because a lot of times, one of the things about Kyrie Irving, it strikes me, guys, he very much sees this as his story, right? Like, we talk about LeBron or KD. What's better for LeBron? What's better for KD? Let me ask from Kyrie's point of view, what's better for Kyrie? Is it KD or LeBron? Right now he's with KD. They have not done very much, although they've been hamstrung, right, with injuries and stuff like that, but they really haven't advanced very far. And with LeBron, he was in the finals every year in a much weaker Eastern Conference and won a chip against a 73-win team. Who's better at this point in their careers for Kyrie, Jay, KD or LeBron?
So I think KD and Kyrie are the most skillful duo that game of basketball has ever seen, right? Just because of the ways they can score and do everything. But it almost, like, when thinking about it over the weekend, because this was a topic of conversation, because people were saying Kyrie should go back and partner with LeBron, and Tristan Thompson was called on TMZ saying that's the best duo that the game of basketball has ever got a chance to see. It does make me think that the way those pieces just feel like they almost fit better, they're more compatible because of how they can be used interchanging, like in a pick and roll, the way they fit, because they both have incredible vision, and KD has good vision too. I don't know though, Key. This one's a tough one. I do wonder about personality though. Like, would LeBron be better for Kyrie? Because at the end of the day, Kyrie would listen to LeBron. I know he would listen to KD, but LeBron has a little bit more of an authoritative, this is what it is, right? Whereas we see KD kind of evolving into that. Whereas Kyrie is that strong personality.
Kyrie,
that's a new name for KD and Kyrie.
Kyrie,
there you go.
I would say,
yeah, I like it.
It's LeBron James. They've done it before, and they could have done it many times over if Kyrie was a little more mature at the time. Stepping away sometimes gives you an opportunity to see what could have been. And I think Kyrie has seen that now, even though he's with Kevin Durant. I think, though, if he was the – and I don't know how it would work, but if you put him with – Anthony, I don't know. I guess you could put him with Anthony Davis. Well, I guess you would probably have to move Anthony Davis to get Kyrie because of salaries and all the other stuff that have to match and whatever. But if there's a way that Kyrie could join the Lakers – be kind of a smart move on his part.
Yeah, it's I would say that whereas Kyrie and KD is the most skillful combination. And by the way, just let's get something out of the way. Kobe and Shaq's the greatest 1-2 punch of all time, right? You can't get back. Kobe and Shaq were probably the 1 and 2 or 1 and 3 best players on earth in their primes when they were together. But if you're talking in terms of impact on winning, if you're talking about just skillfulness.
Yeah, that's what it's
yeah, most skillful. Yeah, I mean, skillful is Kyrie and KD. But in a way, their skills are a bit redundant. It's not like, I mean, can you ever have enough shooting and ball handling? That's great, right? But LeBron and Kyrie, in a way, are more complementary to me. So I would actually say LeBron for Kyrie.
You know, so let's just take skill sets off the table. It's also like, how are relationships managed? Do you want Kyrie managing the relationship, or do you want LeBron managing the relationship? So that's the question that goes into it, right?
LeBron.
Because that was one of the reasons why Kyrie got frustrated at the time, because everybody knew it was LeBron's team. And this is more of KD and Kyrie's team, even though a lot of people inside look at it like Kyrie moves the way he wants to move, right? And nobody really calls him out internally. So how did those dynamics change if it were on LeBron's team would be
well, LeBron's more mature as well as Kyrie. So I think what we saw in Cleveland with them, it won't be the same if they were to ever join forces again. If they were to ever join forces, yeah, that's one that certainly will keep people up at night. Let's just put it that way. That's not what they want to see. They do not want to see those two again.
It'd be awesome if they could somehow, like, it'd be like Kobe and Shaq getting back together and winning another championship, right? As much as they did, they could have done even more. And it feels that way with LeBron and Kyrie. All right. How will these Celtics bounce back tonight after their Game 3 loss?
Bam Adebayo was the guy that really got it started.
Bam was just aggressive. You know, 16 points over the first two games is really not up to his standards.
Drive, spins left, left-handed jump hook. Woo-hoo! Money. Bam Adebayo with 16 points.
They beat us like we stole something in Game 2. So, I mean, that woke a fire up in all of us.
All right, we're going to get to the Heat-Celtics series in just a second. But, guys, we've been talking Lakers. Let's continue, shall we? We're joined now by Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider, and a guy who perhaps has observed LeBron James in a play or two in his career. What's up, Windy?
Good morning, guys.
Windy, who's the best candidate for the Lakers job?
I don't know if I have a clean answer for that, Max. I don't know if the Lakers do either. You know, they made a decision that is always a complicated one in the NBA. When you fire a coach who's been successful, I would say that it's a very good idea to know who you're going to hire when you do that. And, you know, we've seen that through the course of time where teams feel like they need to upgrade and there's a move that they want to make and they make. I mean, a classic one is Steve Kerr. You know, Mark Jackson was successful. They fired him. They knew who they wanted. They got him. They had to win a bidding war with the Knicks to get him. And the rest is history. I mean, that's your grade A example right there. So they fired a coach and they didn't know who they were going to hire. And so they've gone through this process. I will say this, though. You know, when they hired Frank Vogel, if you remember who their finalists were, it was Monty Williams, Frank Vogel, and Jason Kidd. It's very similar to the finalists that they have right now, at least the ones that we know about, with guys like Kenny Atkinson and Terry Stotts. Coaches who have, you know, Darvin Ham is in there too, and he's definitely got a strong chance. But coaches who have coached elsewhere, who are respected to a degree, and who they're not going to have to pay $10 million a year. And they believe, you know, I've been told this, the Lakers believe that, you know, they thought that their process last time around did pretty well. They first decided on Monty Williams. He turned him down. He's proven to be an excellent choice for Phoenix. They hired a guy who helped them to win a title. And the guy that finished second that they hired as their lead assistant, Jason Kidd, is having a great job in Dallas. So they thought that their process last time worked. So they're working their process this time, and they think it's going to work. We'll see.
Wendy, if the goal is to win a world championship yesterday, does it behoove the Lakers to have a guy like Darvin Ham who doesn't have the head coaching experience, even though we've seen Ime Udoka in his first year with the Boston Celtics lead them to an Eastern Conference Finals? Or are they looking for somebody with more head coaching experience that have been to the playoffs? You know, you talk about a guy like Terry Stouts or obviously a guy like Kenny Atkinson who was here with the Brooklyn Nets for a while.
I mean, this is exactly what they're asking themselves, Jay. I mean, look, let's say you were contacted about this job and they said to you, hey, come in here and interview for us. It's not an easy job at all. It's a really hard job. I mean, it's the Los Angeles Lakers, so you're going to go and you're going to interview and you're going to want it. But you're holding a really difficult hand. And not only that, but the Lakers realize, and I don't think they realize it because they think that there's some sort of miracle out there, but they're looking at having to keep Russell Westbrook because there's not a trade out there for them to do that they can stomach, at least not right now. And so, you know, after you go through the pleasantries, you got to now present your plan of how you're going to make this work with Russell Westbrook. And if you prepared for that coaching interview, you watched Russell Westbrook's exit interview after the last day of the season, where he torched everything that happened, and he torched the concept of him bending at all. It is a bad hand. And then you look at the competitiveness of the West, and you look at the challenges, and your expectation is that you're going to pull some sort of lever and instantaneously make them a contender. when there's probably not going to be a massive change in their roster, that, you know, there's this belief that, you know, changing just the approach or changing, you know, some sort of, you know, motivation level is going to get this mix that was an utter failure this year to work. I mean, I do believe that in the NBA, that coaching is hiring the right coach is vital, and hitting that is the difference between a lot of times being a contender and being on the outside. But this is, it's not a good job. It's not a good job at all. And I wish I could sit here and tell you that they should do this or this, or that their thought process is very clean, because it is not.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider, joining us this morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Note for you, Brian, J. Will said he would not interview for the job earlier on the show, so we don't have to worry about that. Speaking of worrying,
would you interview for it?
Absolutely, and I'd take it yesterday.
Right, just and a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. Speaking of interviewing, taking things, and trying to figure things out, the Boston Celtics played a Miami Heat. The Heat beat them the other night without Jimmy Butler in the second half. What's the update on Jimmy Butler's knee injury?
I think he's probably going to try to play. He went through some treatment yesterday, and the hope is that he's going to recover from that. He had this happen to him in the first round. He missed a game with this, I believe it's an IT band, whatever that means. Sounds hurt, sounds painful. He's just got some inflammation in there. And the treatment that calmed it down last time, they did it again, and I hope we're going to calm it down this time. But to me, the bigger question is the biggest question for this game is Marcus Smart to me, because that injury, we all saw how he landed on his foot, and you know, adrenaline must have kicked in. There's no way that injury happened and you're just A-okay. You walk it off. Maybe mm-hmm. LeBron James. I've seen LeBron, that happened to LeBron and him walk it off, but Even that kind of landing on LeBron probably would cost him a game. Mm-hmm. And that is his right leg that he has had problems on throughout the entire playoffs. He had a quad injury in there several times. That's the same foot that he had the foot sprain where he came back for game two. It probably wasn't 100% healed. And now he's got an ankle all on that right side.
That's a problem.
I would not surprise me at all if Jimmy Butler plays in this game. I think that's what they're hoping. It kind of surprised me if Marcus Smart can play. It would be pretty impressive.
Hey, Wendy, real quick, because we only got about 20 seconds. Do you see Tyler Hero losing some money here? He has not showed up in these playoffs at all.
Yeah, well, he was going to be a difficult how-much-are-you-going-to-pay situation anyway, because he only really plays one side of the court. But his value to the Heat is to deliver them baskets when they're under pressure in the half court. That is their biggest weakness as a team. That is his biggest value to them. And at the highest stakes here, he hadn't been able to do it. And he gets hunted on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. And they benched him down the stretch of the game the other day. Now, he might have a quad injury. They're not really being 100% clear. But, you know, that's not what you want to take to your meeting when you're asking for your money, especially when the Heat have a whole bunch of money on the table. It wouldn't stun me if the Heat investigate a trade market for Tyler Hero, but that's obviously something that will be discussed in the summer.
That is Brian Windhorst, ladies and gentlemen. Wendy, always great talking to you.
Thanks, Wendy.
Have a great week, guys.
You too. The Yankees-White Sox series was more heated than usual this weekend, and there's a very good reason for that. We're going to talk about why next. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Josh Donaldson, the Yankees third baseman, called Tim Anderson, who is black, Jackie, in reference to Jackie Robinson. Now, Donaldson said that he has done this in the past.
It was pretty dumb by Josh Donaldson to do that. It was unnecessary, it was disrespectful, and it wasn't funny.
Yeah, he just made a disrespectful comment. You know, basically, was, you know, trying to call me Jackie Robinson. Like, what's up, Jackie? I don't play like that. I don't really play at all.
Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. You can download the podcast. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. So, as you heard on the way in to this segment just now, Josh Donaldson, Yankees third baseman, who has, seems to play for a different team every year, good productive player in the field and at the plate, has won an MVP in the past, but seems to burn out his welcome pretty quickly around the league and go from team to team for a guy who produces like he does. Recently, that's earlier this month, he threw a hard tag on Tim Anderson, the White Sox shortstop and batting champion, by the way, and benches cleared. So there's been some bad blood. They were teammates in Atlanta, and, you know, and listen, Donaldson's reputation precedes him. Being kind of burning out clubhouses and being that kind of guy. In this case, Josh Donaldson called Tim Anderson Jackie. Tim Anderson, an all-star African-American middle infielder, right? He calls him Jackie, as in Jackie Robinson. And Tim Anderson was not happy about that. This is what Donaldson said happened and why he said what he said, and this is Tim Anderson's response. Listen.
First inning, I called him Jackie. Let me give you a little context of that. 2019, he came out with an interview and said that he's a new Jackie Robinson of baseball. He's going to bring back fun for the game. 2019, when I played for Atlanta, we actually joked about that on the game. And I've said it to him in years past, not in any manner than just joking around, but the fact that he called himself Jackie Robinson. If something has changed from that, my meaning of that is not any term trying to be racist by any fact of the matter. It was just off of an interview that what he called himself.
Yeah, he just made a, you know, disrespectful comment. You know, basically was, you know, trying to call me Jackie Robinson. Like, what's up, Jackie? I don't play like that. I don't really play at all. I wasn't really, you know, bothering nobody today, but, you know, he made a comment, and, you know, it was disrespectful. I don't think it was called for. It was unnecessary.
That was when you guys crossed past the shortstop there at the end of the third.
Yeah, but that happened in the first time he got on, you know, and I spared him that time, and it happened again. You know, it's just uncalled for. You know, it's not, you know, I got time to, you know, be playing like that.
Now, guys, for additional context, before we get into this, I want you to listen to Liam Hendricks. This is a White Sox pitcher, so Tim Anderson's teammate. Talk about and pay attention especially to Josh Donaldson's reputation around the league. Listen to Liam Hendricks.
Yeah, that's completely inappropriate. And then after hearing what was said after the game, usually you have inside jokes with people you get along with, not people that don't get along at all. And so that statement right there was complete bull. But then again, my feelings towards the individual in question are pretty well documented in the fact that we don't get along. and the fact that I have now spoken to, I think it's four separate clubhouses that he's been into, and as a whole, none of them have gotten along. So, yeah, him trying to pull that, trying to whip out that narrative is complete and utter bull.
Well, there you have it. Look, these situations, man, that's why I enjoy working on my show and I enjoy covering all aspects of sports. When you think about Josh and you think about Tim Anderson and Josh Donaldson, two former teammates, he says that he said it in 2019, which was published. Okay, that's cool. That he may have very well did that. There's no question about it because it's published. But what I would say is I don't know if it was had race motivated toward it or whatever the case may be, because I'm not a lip reader. I'm not a body language expert. But I can tell you this. If somebody says something to me that I don't appreciate and I don't like a certain way and they're delivering it a certain way or their attitude is toward things a certain way and they know I didn't rock with them in the past and they think they can joke with me like that, like it's cool, then I'm going to take it a certain way. Clearly, based on what Liam said, he's had history in different clubhouses, so he's a bad person to start with. That all Tim already feels that way. Tim Anderson already feels like he's a bad person. So for him to come out and say, hey, Jackie, that's going to create problems. One of the bigger problems in all of this, too, is too many white people think they can say things that blacks use or blacks may say. You cannot. I don't know how many times we go over this. You can't just freely say things because you think it's cool or you read it or you saw it or you heard it in a rap song. That's going to create problems no matter what anyone says. And he clearly didn't appreciate being called Jackie because we all know what Jackie Robinson stood for when he integrated baseball in 1947. And so I don't know this dude Josh Donaldson's history, but he obviously has some sort of bad history because everybody's speaking about it.
So to me, Josh Donaldson may not be a likable guy. To me, frankly, I don't think that was a racist comment like Tony La Russa has said it was. And here's why. If you call yourself something, you have made yourself open for game. It may be unnecessary. It may be disrespectful. But, Key, as you and I both know, in game of sports, people talk trash all day long. It may not be the right kind of trash talk you may want to hear. But unless somebody's telling me that Josh Donaldson has had a history of saying racist-like remarks, then that's a different story. But you calling somebody Jackie, in which they've called themselves in the past, to me, that's gamesmanship. That's trash talk. It may be nasty.
Guys, we're up against it. Let's carry this over. We have more to say about this. Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, the ESPN app. We're back right after this.
Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, the podcast.